Off the Bench is a podcast
created by ASCLS
that will discuss the scientific
and not so scientific ideas in laboratory medicine.
We are joined by members
of ASCLS, fellow scientists,
educators, and researchers,
along with those interested in the profession.
We share ideas
and talk nerdy.
This episode of Off the Bench is sponsored by the University of Cincinnati Online. Do you have laboratory experience? If so, you can qualify for the Master of Science in Medical Laboratory Science Leadership at the University of Cincinnati Online. This fully online master's program teaches you the skills to lead and excel in the lab and beyond. Students from all laboratory backgrounds are welcome. Visit online.uc.edu/MLSL to learn more.
Welcome, everyone, to the Off the Bench podcast. My name is Dorian Redding.
And I'm Sophia Chandrasekhar.
And today we are joined by a very special guest. Special guest, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, no problem. My name is Leticia Nunez Argote. Nice to be here with you.
We are happy to have you. So for people who don't know why you're here today, why don't you give us a little bit of your background and where you work, what you do? And today, especially, we're going to be focused on your work with the Diversity and Advocacy Council. So anything you want to say about that?
Thank you. Sure. So just a little bit about myself. I am a laboratory professional through and through, graduated from UNC Chapel Hill program, class of 07, long time ago. And I've worked in a clinical laboratory after that in Raleigh, North Carolina for a little while. And as I was doing that, I took a lot of twists and turns in the game of life and proceeded to pursue a master's and then a PhD. And in the meantime, I have fallen into a wonderful career as a faculty member for laboratory programs, first in Arkansas and now currently in my Kansas. And so I've taught mostly immunology, wow, for over 10 years. You'd be surprised how much I've learned about it. I was lucky to be involved with the Doctor of Clinical Laboratory Science program here at Kansas, and I'm teaching that as well. So those are mostly the things I do. I teach undergraduate laboratory classes, immunology mostly, which is always my funnest time. I think that the one subject I cannot let go is syphilis. I have to be involved in some way, shape, or form with that. And so that is why I've been very fortunate to continue to pursue that and to help our learners, you know, become laboratory professionals as best as they can. And right now, what I also do as a faculty member is I do research on the laboratory professionals as my subjects. And so my biggest interest right now is in the health and well-being of our colleagues at working in the front lines, and particularly with a lot of the stress and burnout situation, especially with COVID. But also, I'm interested in additional health-related, physical health and chronic health-related things like musculoskeletal pain, hearing loss, visual impairment, those kinds of more like you can't really measure, but you know it's happening in the laboratory. So that is kind of what I do also. And last part, I think, for the DAC. So I've been involved with the Diversity, Equity, Inclusion initiatives with my current job as a learner. I've been very fortunate that we have very robust programs that I've been involved with, like book clubs and speakers and seminars and so forth. So I started to absorb a lot of that, particularly after 2015 and 2020 and all of these things that have happened. But as I was involved in that, I learned about the Diversity Advocacy Council as ASCLS has been working a lot to also promote diversity in our organization. And I was invited by Kim von Ossend to participate in at the national level. And so I was very fortunate to serve as chair-elect and then as chair, and currently serving as past chair. And so many of the activities that we do involve trying to bring more awareness, but also make it so that people are comfortable, but also challenged by the gaps that we all have in our knowledge for DEI. And so it's very exciting to be still involved with that, at least for the foreseeable future. I was just recently helping with the PRISM event in January. Mm-hmm. And we're looking forward to some exciting things coming up in Lab Week and during JAM. So this is so far kind of how it's been.
For those who don't really know the background of DAC, we know that's Diversity Advocacy Council. I guess, how did it begin and sort of the impact it's had so far on community members?
Yes, and I think part of it is having a space where we can have individuals who want to continue to bring forward these topics and make sure that the organization is centering in and has that viewpoint. Part of organizations as old as ASCLS, previously AMT, it's just decades of history. Mm-hmm. But that history is steeped in all sorts of, culture and societal movements. And so to me, the DAC is a space where we can have people who are advocating for diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging to be at the forefront of the decisions that we are individuals who are interested, who bring those perspectives, and also a place for people who may not normally be included in the laboratory profession to also find community. I say that because I did not realize this when I was going through school. That was one of the last things in my mind as a 20-year-old trying to get a degree so I could work. Mm-hmm. But as I entered the workforce, it became really clear to me how there are different avenues to enter a professional career. And, yeah. And professional societies are made of professionals. And so even from that journey all the way to now as a faculty member, I try to keep my mind open to seeing that our profession is quite diverse. We have so many different people and ideas who have different interests and abilities and things that they excel at, like microbiology, or things that suck at, like microbiology, like me. And so it's such a cool and fascinating group of people that we work with. Yeah. But yet the society doesn't quite reflect that as the decades go by. So the DAC has the power to continue to push that as something that we are ideally hoping to achieve, where we all feel like we belong and we are continuing the legacy of ASCLS while also reminding ourselves that there's a fair distance to travel, not just for this organization, but for any organization that has had such a long history. So the mission is to remind people of the challenges, the opportunities, and the importance of diversity in our society, I think.
And that is so cool. I love how you mention the long history that the organization has and how, over time, obviously, we're going to have to learn and grow and develop, new skills that maybe weren't a thing of the past. Specifically, as of the day that we're recording this today, I saw that you just posted in the ASCLS Connect a call for people to make short videos that are in line with the TikTok trend that's currently going about. And I think that that is totally a testament to that exact thing, because, when in the past of these organizations would we have been like, yes, the social media content must be created, and that's really a focus of this generation. Specifically speaking on that, where did that idea come about? What kind of things lead up to a decision like that being made?
Well, I'm very fortunate to have, the DAC currently, the leadership, Ryan is our current chair, is wonderful, lots of ideas, a very a driven person, but also we have people who have been involved for longer, like Kyle Writing, who's our current liaison from the board. And so having a good mix of people who have the perspective of where the DAC is coming from, but also who can see the opportunity. And so things like, for example, one of the things that I'm really excited, proud of, and just fortunate to have experience in my time serving is the movie night that started. And that was an idea that was kind of we want to do something that is different and that involves a different kind of media, because, Zoom started to happen, COVID kind of drove a lot of people indoors with their families. And so starting to explore different avenues to more quickly and more effectively communicate. And I started seeing that. I started being more involved with ASCLS back in 2014. And I could see how things move so slowly because we're relying on like email for communication or like waiting for my ASCLS today to come to my mailbox. Mm-hmm. And so those are great because I loved getting mail, good mail, not bills. Yes. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, like, social media has just been such an important component of life. And a lot of ASCLS members still communicate through Facebook, for example.
Sure.
And so having to keep in mind different generations, but at the same time, welcoming the new stuff, right? And so, yes, TikTok can be intimidating. But at the same time, I think it's such a great way to bring awareness, to mm-hmm. highlight the uniqueness and the awesomeness of laboratory professionals.
Yeah.
And it's something that can inspire people to be creative because we have a lot of creative laboratory people in our midst.
That one.
I know. I'm just, you know, wink, wink. So, I mean, even to one of my favorite things to do is browse and look for the microbiology, like art on the plates, like the control
plate.
And so there's just different ways of showcasing the wonderful things that we do while also being very professional and saving lives and being awesome. So
sure.
In thinking about that trend, I had started seeing that I was like, you know, this would be a really cool uplifting thing to do for Lab Week, like something mm-hmm. that could mm. be kind of showing people that we care, because that really is what I feel like ASLS is all about, is showing our colleagues in the laboratory that we care for each other. And so, I mean, I'm not sure how it's going to go. I'm going to definitely hope that we have a few people who will become interested. We'll see how it goes. But I know that whatever it is that people do, it's going to be great because it is about time that we continue to, you know, to build on those generations and welcome people who mm-hmm. are more tech savvy, who like to display and showcase their skills and share that with the world.
So I know DAC also has other events and PRISM is one of them. Mm-hmm. And specifically this year, well, not just this year. I know in the past we've also had PRISM book clubs, but this year's PRISM book club, do you mind telling us some more about that book? And I'm so sorry. I forgot the name of the book.
No problem. And so I actually, I will not claim the whole idea for myself because this was an inspiration that came out of group and conversation. And so just to answer that, the 2024 PRISM book club book is The Diversity Gap by Bethany Wilkinson. And the book club itself was an idea that came for a few years of trying to introduce these kinds of topics in our organization. So there have been, it's been like 3 years, this would be the fourth book club. So the original one, the first one we started with CAS, The Origins of Our Discontent, was the first one. We also then did the Demanding More by Sheree Atchison, and that's more of a leadership book. Mm-hmm. And then the last year we had Sitting Pretty, The View from My Ordinary Ceiling Disabled Body. So we're trying mm-hmm. to introduce books to kind of help build on the perspective from different viewpoints, either building our skills as laboratory professionals and just human beings who may not have access to this information any other way. But particularly with this book, which when I read it, was like, this is so great. It's because it gave tools and frameworks, like things that people could practically apply, especially for us young people who are maybe transitioning into leadership. And so part of that was hoping that people would at least get their interest piqued and maybe try to see what it was about. So that was kind of the focus of why the book clubs have been around, is just to kind of give people an idea of what content is out there that is helpful. For 2024, however, I had seen for the past 2 years the book club itself and how it happened. And I feel like originally doing a Zoom book club was fine, especially during COVID. It makes sense. More people were indoors. But I felt like we should probably try a different ways, because one of the things that I find works for me a lot is doing it synchronously. Like I have conversations with my siblings on Instagram that are just memes. So just, you know, you get a notification or somebody like send you a little message, and then you can check it whenever you can. And when you do, you can reply and take your time. And so maybe instead of trying to get people together at the same time, the same day, like a night during the week. But what if I work night shift when I can't make it, like that kind of thing? Yeah. I was like, let's see if there's any other ways. And so Andrea Hickey from ASCLS shared that there was this book clubs platform and that they were already kind of using it for other things within the organization. I was like, was there any way that we can leverage that and hope to like improve, you know, our, you know, reach with the book club? Mm-hmm. It was really nice. They set it all up. It's, you know, again, I can't be take all the credit, but it's more like I went with the idea. So fast forward December, I was like, okay, how about we do it on the build up to Prism? Just the touch points for the chapters, and then they can be there forever. And so anyone who comes in later and is like, oh, I wonder how that went, you can log in, sign up, look at it, read it. And then I still look for messages sometimes. So I did get quite a few messages going back and forth. So that was kind of how it went for this time around.
I really appreciate the asynchronicity part of it. Asynchronous part of it. Because I got to knowing this year's book, The Diversity Gap, from your Instagram videos, actually your Instagram shorts. And I was basically listening to every single one and getting like your Cliff Notes version of it, as well as like going back to look at the book. And I really appreciate that, because I mean, you know, holiday season, especially since Prism is right at the middle of January, things are a little crazy up to that point. So I personally really, really appreciate it. And I love that idea too.
Thank you. Yeah, and I appreciate that. I'm glad you enjoyed them. I enjoyed doing them. I will say it was probably one of the hardest things. I'm not the most creative person, so it was one of the hardest. It took a lot of time, but it was a very rewarding time. So for those out there, I mean, I don't get paid to do it. I mean, it's volunteer, but it's volunteer. It gives me a sense of purpose, because I know that there are a lot of people out there who may not have somebody to talk to about these types of topics, but are wanting to explore them. And my hope is that this gives people a point of connection. The other thing that we really tried to do with the AC, even though obviously it is an ASCLS or organized group, is to keep our events free. So any professional, even if they do not belong currently to ASCLS, can participate, because it's important that as laboratory professionals, there are many reasons why people do not belong to a professional society. Yeah. However, if we can share information and communicate this important, that very important topics with them, that was one of the biggest things that we try to do with Prism, is that it is open. We've had people who are not even laboratory professionals attending. So that is something that is really exciting for us. And so with this book club, my hope is that we can continue similar efforts or even different, like whoever does it in the future, they can have their own creativity. Don't limit yourself to whatever format. Like, there will be new things coming around. Maybe VR, I don't know. And so so whatever it is, if you want to collaborate and be a part of it, that's, you know, sky's the limit.
Yeah.
What were some of the key takeaways that you think people or our listeners should take from the book if they haven't had a chance to read it themselves? Like, what would you say are the most important things they should know and why they should read this book?
Well, I would say I have that this book really opened my perspective to, I'm a very theoretical person. I like learning. It opened my perspective to the different ways into, how I as a person approach diversity work. Because the word diversity work is like anything, is just a continuing thing. Like, you were never done doing it. Like, you'd never done really understanding everything, because every time things change, culture changes, society changes. More people are going to show up and some people are not going to be around, then things will change. And so to me, this book, it was a great template to keep me hopeful and to provide me some tools to remind myself why I want to continue in this journey. Some people may not have started it. Some people may not think it's necessary for them. And to those people, I'd say, you know, give it a chance. Because even when I thought, oh, I probably have this down, by reading this book, I was like, oh, I have it down here, but there's this whole section that I had never thought about. Mm. So to me, this book gave me a lot of hope. It gave me a lot of tools that helped me navigate a lot of situations that can be tricky, both in life and at work, which are both things that you can't stop, you know, trying not to do. Like, I have to work. Sorry, that's kind of a thing. So my hope is that people will get from this book that diversity work is not hopeless, that there are ways that you can always keep learning and keep it real and keep it to, you know, keep yourself accountable, but also give yourself some grace. So those things, if anything, I hope that people will get a chance to check it out.
And I do think that that's a really good segue into, you know, how diversity advocacy and diversity inclusion can be tailored to other types of settings, you know, in education, in the professional realm, and how that supersedes not just, you know, doing an organizational task, but, you know, what are some ways that we could better implement things like that in our everyday life?
Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, this is one of those things where I cannot feel like the expert. I will say I have had to learn a lot from scratch. I think the first thing that anyone who wants to embark in a journey where you're hoping to implement more DI concepts into, let's say, education first, I think taking a step back and really looking at yourself and where you come from and what your values are, because mm-hmm. that will then kind of inform a lot of the things that you can do moving forward. So when even at a workplace, like you said, workplace or education, whatever it is that you're doing, one of my biggest challenges has been to really stop and think when I hear something that somebody's said, or in work, when something's doing and you're like, why are you doing this? Like, why is this a thing that you think you should be doing? I'm very confused. But then to stop and think, like, not have a judgment and say, okay, why is this happening? Let's be curious, but let's give people grace. Mm-hmm. And so even small things like there were some of my participants that were sharing things like people struggling through COVID. Mm-hmm. And until I was curious enough to ask them, like, what do you mean by struggling? Like, what is the struggle like? And it was the thing that never would have crossed my mind. You know, I was thinking maybe their managers weren't giving them time off. And a lot of them, you know, were struggling with that. It's like, oh, you see, I'm having trouble with my spouse. Like, they really hate that I work in healthcare. They're really scared. Mm-hmm. They want me to quit my job because they don't want me to die. Like, things like, you know, risk, put our family at risk.
Yeah.
And I would have never, like, that was, I mean, it's obvious. After they say, it was like, well, duh. But when you're not curious enough, those kinds of things don't come out. And when you stop and say, oh, like, they're being lazy. No, they were worried. They had those things in their minds, or they, you know, they're not working as hard, or they're taking too many breaks, or things that yeah. or for our learners, like, oh, they're not studying hard enough. They're not getting good grades. Well, what is it that is happening in the background? Mm-hmm. Is there, I mean, it's probably not something I could fix, but acknowledging it and say, I understand people struggle. I don't need to fix it, but I need to show that I understand it, and that to ask, like, if is me listening to you help it, if it's helpful in any way, let's do that and let's see what we can do moving forward. So mm-hmm. as a laboratory professional, I've had the benefit of collaborating and working with a lot of really cool people. I've learned a lot from them. Mm-hmm. But even now, I mean, I feel like it's changed my perspective. So doing a lot of the DEI learning has allowed me to open my mind to that, to being more human, has humanized a lot of people more for me. I don't think that I would have been able to get to where I am without having the opportunity to learn about diversity, equity, and inclusion. And there's so many scholars and so many theories that I've been able to explore that provide that context. And that's not something I learned anywhere else. It's been this work that has allowed me to do that.
This episode of Off the Bench is sponsored by the University of Cincinnati Online. Are you a laboratory science professional interested in leadership, administrative, or higher education opportunities? The University of Cincinnati Online's Master's in Medical Laboratory Science Leadership will equip you to fill these roles and more. Students from all lab science backgrounds can qualify for the fully online program, which lets you balance completing your degree with work and life commitments. The program is led by ASCLS President-elect Dr. Patricia Tilley. She and the rest of the world-class faculty are there to support you from your application to your graduation. Visit online.uc.edu/MLSL to learn more.
I think that there's room to talk about this more, right? Because it is, it's such an important topic, and like the journey that it takes you on, like in your own life, to like end up in this place where you can look back and be like, oh, this is like what led me to this moment. I hope you don't mind, but like ahead of the episode, I did Google you. And I know that your work is not only that you already mentioned in, you know, previously that, you know, your work has taken you all across like America too, and all those different states, but you've also been like international too. If you want to talk about anything like that and how, you know, diversity is kind of different through that lens as well.
Sure. No problem. And, you know, for those of you who don't know and haven't read my yet to be written autobiography coming to your shelves in the next 5 to 10 years, I was born and raised in Mexico, and honestly, very different from what I feel like most people, not everyone, but most people would have expected to meet a Mexican who's like without an accent and who can go attend college classes without any problems. Like it was from the beginning of my journey coming to United States and completing a career and working here and so on and so forth. It has been an eye-opening experience. If anything, for everyone, if you've never been anywhere but where you are, please, please, please consider at least going somewhere for like a long holiday. Preferably try to like do maybe a travel assignment. I don't know. The reason I say that is because I came from Mexico to go to college, and I thought to myself, well, after I'm done, I can go home and like work there. Ended up getting a job here, works out. But then I was like, I want to go and learn more. And so I went to do a master's in Mexico because it's free. And yes, you know, take advantage while we can. But also, I mean, it's because our government does place a lot of emphasis in learning and wants people to actually not be indebted. But that's a different story for a different time. So my journey into going back home after going through the college experience, I really was not prepared to all of the experiences that I was gonna live. I ended up serving in a hospital in the blood bank because I'm qualified to do that.
Yeah.
And it's community service too, so it's free. Like I was doing blood banking for free. I know it's like you get an education, so you have to serve a certain time to help provide for services to people. And just being in a laboratory in Mexico, it was just an incredibly eye-opening experience. I mean, blood is blood. Everybody's types were ABO, so no craziness there, you know, like Rh positive, negative. But the whole system built around it, it was just such an interesting dynamic. There were different, the procedures were the same, but the way that you like acquired reagents or the way that you managed patients. The blood bank was in charge of doing all of the donor collection as well. So I was able to be involved in both, mm-hmm. which was my first time actually helping out with that side. And mm-hmm. I don't think I would have had that opportunity in the United States. Like if, as mm-hmm. a medical laboratory scientist, most of my work's always been at the bench, in wet lab, like doing testing. I don't think it would have been even an idea of someone with an MLS certification to go and like, I'm going to be the one getting the blood from the donors, maybe testing the donor blood, but not actually getting it. So yeah. It was such an eye-opening experience to work in a different country with a different healthcare system. The set of patients that I was able to speak to, I mean, mm-hmm. they've taught me so much. And so finally coming back and then getting involved in education, those experiences changed me and they changed my perspective on healthcare as a whole. Mm-hmm. And I think had I stayed in the US and just worked in a lab, I may have missed out on those upstream situations that can happen. Like here, I have a patient who is coming back every couple of weeks with this X, Y, and Z situation. I see their blood coming in, I do their blood work, and I wonder. Mm-hmm. And having the ability to go out and to face those people and hear their challenges was an incredibly like eye-opening experience. So yeah. To be fair, I think that work that I did in Mexico is probably one of the biggest, best opportunities, luck for me that I was able, I mean, I was so fortunate to have. I know that not everybody's going to be able to do that, but if you sure. can, I know there's different avenues. Look for yeah. one and give it a go. I mean, it's your skills are needed. Mm-hmm. One of my really good colleagues, excellent microbiologist, awesome person in Arkansas, I'm not going to say names because I don't, you know, their privacy or whatever. But
great person. We're nipping them up.
Yes. Did a trip over the summer to believe Tanzania to help with you know, again, parasitology and testing and all of that. Mm-hmm. And I know that those can be different experiences, but I think if you do it a couple of times, you start kind of getting the idea of what it's like to be somewhere else. And you get away from the, oh, our way is better. And it's like, this is such yeah. a cool thing that these people are doing. They're great. And so I give that experience that I had internationally. It was probably one of the most rewarding. Plus, I got to live with my grandparents. And that's the best time I've had. Like living with your grandparents as an adult is awesome. Mm. So if you ever have it not, I don't know if anybody has the chance, but if you ever have a chance to do yeah. that, because I had the best food, the best conversation. My mom wasn't there, so there wasn't that middle person. And so, I mean, you know, overall, best time I had. Yeah.
Oh, man. I love the advice that we're getting out of this. Go travel. Take your grandparents with you. So I grew up on the border of Mexico. I'm from El Paso. And my first job over there was, you know, at, you know, a hospital that's in Texas in America, but half of the doctor's like primary language was Spanish and a majority of the lab, like that primary language is Spanish. And, you know, the patient population that would come in through the way that we had it formatted there was, you know, there weren't a lot of English speaking patients. And the way that dynamic is completely different now that I live in Virginia, and that's not an issue anymore. Like just seeing that difference, like speaks volumes just in perspective too.
Yes. Yes. Oh, well, I'm glad you had that experience. I was not that far, like 5 hours south of that. So it's, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's why I think it's so cool that we're talking today about diversity and advocacy and things for that, because I love when people are so surprised that I'm half Mexican. I think that it's just so important that, you know, and there will be people who listen to this and they're like, oh yeah, there are different, you know, situations where I feel more seen, and there are things that are happening in organizations and workplaces that, you know, make me feel seen and in my element. And that happens through the stories we share.
Yeah.
So that's
true.
If people are interested in doing things to try to promote more diversity or even just better learning experiences, definitely bring that up to your managers. Mm-hmm. Because as a Taiwanese American, my supervisor came up to me and she said one day, hey, isn't Lunar New Year coming up soon? Do you want to put up some flyers around with some information about Lunar New Year so people can learn about it? And I was like, oh, didn't think about that. Sure. So I made like little educational flyers and put it up around the lab. We did the same thing for Black History Month. We put up different famous, or unfortunately not famous, but should be famous, African-American scientists and medical laboratory scientists that contributed so much to healthcare that people don't know about. And it was fantastic to have those flyers. So I think another person for Native American History Month, he put up Native American flyers, flyers about Native American history and culture. So if you are someone in the lab who's like, I have ideas, flyers are super easy. Bring it up with your manager, and that's something you can easily do to make things feel more open. That way people can see the other side of things. Because as I'm listening to you, Letty and Dorian, I've worked in the same lab I graduated from, and never worked anywhere else. So my experience is very, very minimal. I did work all around the clock. Like, I've worked all the shifts, but I haven't worked in other places. So I love hearing stories about other locations and how other places do it.
Well, and to be fair, it's something that is encouraging. I will say, and I probably trained in a similar place where you trained.
I think so.
But I mean, even during training, I had the opportunity to train in multiple sites and see how different places did things. Mm-hmm. And so even drawing from those perspectives, even if you've lived in the same city and only changed jobs from one lab to the other, those are experiences that you can compare and grow from. I remember one of the first times as a, you know, almost graduating intern in a lab in the VA. I actually trained in the VA in Durham for a little while, and the microbiology, that was an experience. Kudos to them, really well trained there. And they, one of the ladies told me, like, what's your name? I was like, Leticia, but you can call me Letty. And I was like, why? Leticia is your name. I'll call you your name. You should have people call you your name. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think that was one of the first times that I really was like, oh, that's right. Like, people should just, you know, this is who I am. And so just instead of, I mean, sometimes you try to accommodate your experience to what makes people more comfortable, but at the same time, it's like if you have someone like that person, like, give you that push, you should take mm-hmm. it. So like you said, if a manager or a supervisor or somebody's like, hey, is this something you feel comfortable doing? Is this something that you are interested in doing? Go ahead and do it. I think that sharing perspectives and culture and things like that is very important. So that you help people grow too.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
That was a really cool anecdote about a time where, you know, having that positive interaction with a mentor really, you know, spoke to the inclusion of anything. With you as an educator and in all of the roles that you have right now, do you feel any sort of way about being, you know, a mentor on this topic, or, you know, in your population, like where you live right now, or any thoughts on that?
Sure. Let's see. I have lots of different people in my life who have served as mentors. I know that there's different ways of doing it, you know, being the mentor for someone. And I know people who have like lifelong mentors, like someone they met early in their career and they've just keep in touch, and that's fine. I think I'm more of the kind of person who likes to, and I hate to call it, it's like, I will highlight the things about people that have, you know, had the most impact on my life. And mm-hmm. and you do always remember that one person that taught you the perfect way to strike a plate, or, you know, like that, you know, that person who gave you that really good piece of advice. So to me, being a mentor is more about being there when a person needs it and trying to listen.
Yeah.
Because there may be things that I am not capable of doing. And as far as diversity, equity, and inclusion is concerned, I have such a long way to go. I know other people who are such great thinkers on the topic. And mm-hmm. so I do probably have a high bar to where, like, where should I be to feel like I am the person that knows?
Yeah, meeting that bar.
Yeah. some people don't, you know, I feel like some of them are, you know, there. And so to mm-hmm. me, that's who I look up to. But I feel like that hesitancy of mine to not think of myself as the person that has the answers is it comes from a place of my own personal journey and how I've gotten to where I am. I definitely acknowledge, like, were it not for the fact that I was educated in a really great school, like, I do know that there were certain times where having a degree from the school where I graduated from, it was the key to open the door. Because, you know, the reputation and people thinking, well, that's a great place and you've learned everything you need to know. I trust that you are smart, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, wow, I'm not sure about that, but great, it works out. But then that's a type of privilege, and that's nothing wrong with wanting or having like privilege. Yeah. It's just a matter of, okay, I'm going to leverage this and try to help people with what I can. And so being a mentor, I've felt more comfortable with things like, for example, immigration or being an immigrant is something that I feel a lot more comfortable in sharing my experience, but also trying to help people who may be in that situation. And I'm not an expert and I'm not going to give any legal advice, but to show that, you know, it's not empathy just for empathy's sake, but it's like, I've been there. It's scary. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I use that experience to then think about where other people are, you know, people who come from a different background, they have their own struggles. And so by respecting that and harnessing their struggle and their experience, and then, hey, I may not be the best person, but here is this wonderful other person who is my guru on it, and they will help you. And so in being a mentor, I think it's important to know where you can have the most beneficial impact on a person and where you should like delegate that to another person who may have that additional skill. So that's my take on being a mentor for my students and for like colleagues and people in my community.
Yeah, that's a good philosophy. I mean, I think that any workplace or situation could totally benefit from, you know, having people surrounding them who encourage them and build trust and, you know, just are inspiration for, you know, living one's best life despite what life throws at you. And I think that that's kind of what that's all about. That's cool. I like it.
Agreed. If there are people who want to be involved with the DAC, what can they do? Like, because there are things they can do at home, or should they start contacting somebody? Yeah.
Well, as all of our wonderful members at ASCLS may know, starting from that group, our group of ASCLS colleagues, if you have not done so, when you renew your membership, there is an option for you to become a member of the DAC My Community. And so as you're going through that electronic form or paper form or whichever form you go, there is a way for you to, and there's no extra cost. You can just mark that. And that way you would be able to see the communications as they go out specifically for the DAC. We tried to do DAC My Community communications and open forum, but I think that by being checking the box of being a member of the DAC, what it gets for me is I when I get a message from ASCLS that says DAC, I open it. Sometimes the open forum, I'm like, I think that's gonna be a long one. I'll save it for later. I don't know. So if you become a member of the DAC by just checking the box, you will already be kind of starting to get that connection. And then obviously we do have all of the materials available. For those of you who want to be participating as counselors, that's a little bit of a step up for that if you have a little bit more time and interest. Every year the DAC has nominations for 3 counselors. There's 2-year terms. And so that those would be people who are helping the DAC move our events. And, you know, those are people who help us choose the book, choose the movie that we're going to watch, and decide what other activities we can do on behalf of ASCLS. And maybe get, you know, to be speakers for in PRISM or help with those activities as well. Right now, if you've already renewed your membership and you forgot to check the box, you can actually go to the My Community and join. So you don't have to wait until that time. So those are two ways that you can kind of start getting more involved if you would like to. And then again, for anyone in the laboratory community, we do have PRISM as an open event, and we always welcome feedback and collaboration with other with professionals and other healthcare professionals. So we're always happy to hear from our collaborators in other areas. But definitely those would be some of the initial steps.
So to close out the show, since you currently teach immunology, and I know you like syphilis as a subject.
Wait, I want to hear more about that. Yeah.
If you could pick an immunology test, which one would you pick?
For syphilis?
Or for any, but if you want to do for syphilis, yes.
Oh, like my favorite test?
Mm-hmm, your favorite test.
Oh, man.
So it's going to be for syphilis.
That's the thing, though, because it's going to be boring. I mean, I like the RPR a ton, but just in general, any of the flocculation, like I know this might not be popular, but I really enjoy the VDRL. It's not something that people normally do, I understand, but it's just the history. The richness, like how does this test come to exist?
How did it? Is it like super duper interesting?
Well, I mean, to me, because I'm a nerd, but you know, if you think about it, okay, when was syphilis at its highest in this country? World War II. And so you have a lot of service members going around the world doing all sorts of military service, obviously. And so at that time,
thank you for serving. Yes.
At that time, the treatment of penicillin was still kind of not really well, you know, understood as, you know, it becomes the treatment, of course, for syphilis. But that's when things are starting to move around as far as treatment. Before then, there was really like, let's do this, you know, weird treatments that may or may not work. And so it's the military, the US military, that puts out a call for a test that can be used as massive screening. Now we're going to screen people, and as we all know, screening tests are only to include people as potentially infected. And then you do their, mm-hmm. you know, more specific test to kind of rule out any false positives, whatever. Mm-hmm. And to see the race to develop the VDRL as the like gold standard for testing for syphilis that can be used for screening cheaply and mass. I mean, to this day, PCR cannot beat the cheapness of an RPR. The cheapness, the ease of doing, like it can be a CLIA waiver. I mean, it's just like the level of training and like, you know, it's kind of like you can't get there yet with diagnostics like molecular, and it's so expensive. Mm. Like, you know, so, I mean, maybe we will get to the point where molecular makes my beloved flocculation test go away, and it's okay. Mm-hmm. I'm not against change. But to me, the way that the VDRL came about, I do believe, and don't quote me on this, I read somewhere that part of the theory behind it was actually developed by an African-American physician. Mm-hmm. And it was not just the work of one person. It was multiple minds kind of dropping ideas into mm-hmm. what came. The VDRL, and then of course the RPR. And so to me, I mean, even just knowing where the strain of syphilis that we use to test, well, I mean, not syphilis, the treponema that we use to test for syphilis is just fascinating. So it is by far, I think. I mean, and there are all sorts of other really cool tests in the world, but to me, the VDRL is hands down like the coolest test that exists. And syphilis is a disease that's been around for hundreds, if not thousands of years. There's a lot of controversy, a lot of bad, dark things. And it's still, to this day, it is one of the lectures that I have the most, you know, it's a lot of mixed emotions, a little roller coaster. But at the end, I can always say, but then it can be cured. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's drugs and you give people medication and it can go away and people can now be healthy. And that's not something we can say for a lot of our terrible, mean, invasive organisms that we look at in the lab. So definitely. That's, I think, the part of the other reason why I like talking about that topic.
And we got a happy ending. I'm so glad we asked.
Yeah.
You were so excited about that. That was so good.
Thank you so much for coming on our show today. We really, really appreciate it. And I hope our listeners enjoyed the conversation. If you would like to contact us, you can drop a link or you can drop a comment on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter /X/ I don't know what to call it anymore.
App. I've heard it. It's standardized as the app formerly known as Twitter. X.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
That one. You can comment on that one or even LinkedIn if you want to reach out. Yeah, anywhere. If you want to reach out to me personally, I'm at warbler.works on Instagram. Dorian, where can people find you?
I am off the grid. I am not on social media. But, you know, find me in real life and say, hey, what's up? I recognize your voice and that'd be cool.
And Leticia, do you want anyone to contact you?
I mean, sure. I am still at Lena for Love and Lab, like on the Prism posts. I have an Instagram account. I still am on Facebook since 2005. And I know it's been a long time. I am no longer in that app that formerly was called something else for personal reasons. But yes. I'm on LinkedIn too. So you can look for me on LinkedIn. And I'm always happy to chat and you know, reach out to other lab professionals.
Yeah, and let's hope we can continue the conversation online. And so thank you guys for listening. Have a good day. Bye.
Yay.
This episode of Off the Bench is sponsored by the University of Cincinnati Online. Don't wait any longer to advance your laboratory science career. Students from all laboratory backgrounds can qualify for the Master of Science in Medical Laboratory Science Leadership at the University of Cincinnati Online. You can balance work, life, and school while you learn the skills you need to advance. Visit online.uc.edu/MLSL to learn more and apply today.